think this is a good thing. It would seem to be as brief as possible, but as tight as possible. I also want to think that we have another member of the branch present. I also to indicate that Mr. Samaki might slip up to catch a flight back to Pretoria during the course of this. So apologies for that. We've also formally tendered the apologies of the DG, of the acting DG, for other commitments in Pretoria. And we will do the presentation. It will be led by Mr. James Jebe, who is the director responsible for that area of work in the branch for teacher development, etc., in which this particular function is hosted. Just by way of introduction, Honourable Chair, the SGB elections, they constitute a very critical institutional mechanism for the management of quality in the sector, as well as the delivery of the curriculum, the equitable access to schooling, also the Minister's stated commitment on behalf of the Ministry and the Department about the commitment to the improvement of efficiency in the management of schools, especially within the legislative framework that governs this, but also the fact that there is public expectation for the community interest of schools, the communities which surround schools, for that to be equally managed through the process of the attention that they give to school governing body elections. And we've just completed that piece of that service now. So this report will serve both as a signal of the raising of accountability level in the schools, but also to signal that we are entering a season which we have just emphasized at the Minister's strategic retreat, which held in the last week, the sector at Equitable Partners, of which we will, the Minister will obviously cover a lot more in the education budget vote next week. Some of the outcomes and the priorities that have been listed in that exercise. So that the focus in this particular report will also speak to those areas of review of the next administrative cycle, but also to look at some of the things that the member raised in the meeting today in relation to the SAFE strategic plan, which is about the issue of the verification of qualifications, especially when SGBs consider the appointments either of permanent nature, because these posts are governed by provinces, and the department stands at a very long distance from the actual process of appointment. And it's for that reason the process of verification of qualifications, the correct procedure which ought to be followed by school governing bodies, constitute another significant outcome after the process of having elected such a governing body into place. So this is a very important procedural step that we will be watching very carefully as we provide oversight to the national department, because we're often at the tail end once the school governing bodies have made the appointments on their own budget. So I would like to hand over to Mr. Levy now for him to take us through the presentation briefly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, DDG and colleagues. That's how the presentation looks like, but it's not going to be as long as it appears on the screen. The DDG has given us a background already that we will normally have these elections every 3 years. And the DCG has given us some of the strategic significance of SGBs and why we go through elections. Now, I need to indicate that this is a process that takes 3 years for the department to prepare. Now that the elections are over, we're beginning with the preparations of the 2018 elections immediately, because we take lessons learned from the previous elections and we incorporate them into the planning. And what we do for 3 years is to re-establish SGB electoral teams at all levels. We ask heads of departments to appoint in writing electoral officers at provincial level, at district level, and it goes down up to school level. We then enter into agreements with the IEC so that as we plan, we are with them and they are giving us that support because they have a responsibility to oversee all democratic processes in the country. We then begin to put a 3-year management plan in place, which includes the training of electoral officers, the promulgation of SGB election regulations by provinces, and then we conduct these elections. So it's a 3-year type of preparation period. What we do at the Department of Basic Education, we work closely with stakeholders. But it's not the Department of Basic Education that comes up with the rules and regulations and throw them into provinces. We work with provinces, including stakeholders, in the name of LGB associations. We have national LGB associations. We bring them on board. Then we begin to develop guidelines, which then informs every province on how to develop regulations that will govern the LGB election. We develop training manuals together, and then we develop advocacy materials together. So it becomes a team thing. The DBE facilitates this movement and ensure that everybody is on board. So we then expect at provincial level, after we've given them the guidelines and all the materials that they need to use, that they begin to promulgate their own regulations for each election period. So it changes every 3 years, the monthly rights regulations, because there are changes that come in there. Then we expect them to have those different electoral officers in place and train the members. We expect provinces to have schools, because our electoral officers are principals. So one principal from one school will conduct elections in the neighboring school and there's some pieces like that. So that has to be in writing, and we receive these things long before the election even began. And then schools have to ensure that they compile voters' rolls. It is important to compile the voters' rolls because they don't take school registers and use them as they are. Because we may find that a parent has 3 children in a school. Some children are under some guardianship of some sort. So we need to know exactly who's responsible for the child, and that comes into the voters' roll, and that is used on the day of election. And then we conduct advocacy campaigns and we develop schedules, election schedules, so that we know at what day each school is going to conduct its own elections. In case they don't make it on that day, what's the alternative day? So all the days are always available at national level, provincial level, and even at district level. So that is the 3 years that we work on. We can develop advocacy campaigns, especially with the help of our communication division. It was important to develop an advocacy campaign because it then raises awareness about the election. We communicate benefits of the participation by parents in the election, and we try and explain the roles of members of the community in the election, and just to promote good governance. When we develop advocacy material, our target is always parents, educators, school administrators, non-governmental organizations, learners, and the public in general. That there is always a mistake that we make thinking that SGBs is about parents. And in reality, SGBs are not parents. SGB is a combination of parents, teachers, learners, and the public parents that are in the school. So when we conduct elections, teachers will elect their own representatives, learners their own representatives. The public servants will also do the same. Together, they then combine with the parents, and that's what you call an LGB in a school. So it's a long, long, long process. So the advocacy also encourages the very same teachers in the school and the learners in the RPS to say, the time has come, please prepare to nominate your people. These are the key messages that we ran in the 2015 election. Just to encourage all parents to support the election by either becoming candidates themselves or by participating in as voters. And we were giving messages like, without parental and community support, education can never be a societal issue as it is faced by the government. We say to parents, good governance starts with you. Get involved, and your school needs you. And then provinces will then take these messages and also feed them up. I can quote one of the adverts that came from the Western Cape, where a member, an elected member of the LGB, went around telling people that now that I'm elected, we need to remove these speed bumps here because they damage my car. We need to do all these things. And the message was, do you really want such a governing body member to run your school? If you don't want, please. So it was based on this message. So provinces have been very creative in that. These are the tools and the methods that we use, our website. When every message that goes out of the DBE around the election period will always have the signature of our LGB election. We went through social media. We went through press releases. We had speeches all over the place and even in the media, opinion pieces. So all those things that television, radio, and print. Some of us never sat around the SGP election period because of radio interviews all over the place. So we use all the platforms as we ran our advocacy. The advocacy campaign was started on the 9th of October when the minister made the public announcement as a social pastor. The media was present. That's when all presidents were expected to begin with the advocacy campaign. There were a lot of press release statements throughout the election period. We had meetings of communicators of all government departments being given the same message of promoting SGP elections. There were presentations that were made at the social cluster by the department. The minister also made a presentation at cabinet. The minister conducted roadshows in provinces just to make sure we're sending the same message all over. Individual provinces via their MECs also had their launches or press media briefing where messages were sent all over. Now, when it came to the election, the start day was the 6th up to the 28th of April. We used principals of electoral officers. We had national, provincial, and district officials being monitors of the elections, including the IEC. Members of school governing bodies, like your PETSAS, your governing body alliance, school governing body associations, were also part and parcel of the monitoring because they have an interest, so they become observers to ensure that things are running smoothly. So that is the progress as of 28 April 2015. As of 28 March 2015. You realize that the Eastern Cape is the province that has the highest number of schools that have not completed the NCD election. And this is due to their slow start in the election. What led to that is that just before the election, there was a bit of a ghost story in the province. The officials were engaging the province, demanding that they be given tools of labor. They want cell phones, laptops, and all that before they even do anything about the election. So the only side of the elections was the end. So that is why we have a very large number of schools that have been elected. So when you look at that figure, it's about 94% of the schools that have completed the elections in the time. So these figures have changed now that schools have reopened. Schools are beginning to catch up. Now, what happens to the elections is that you don't have a closed date that says elections end up here, you can't continue with elections anymore. Because the idea is that every school must elect irrespective. Because if they don't, those SGBs become illegal because the term of office has allowed. So provinces have to work with those outstanding schools and ensure that the election process continues within a short space of time so that we complete the elections completely. These are some of the successes. The 74% that you're reporting to have completed the elections in around the 28th of March is a history in itself. Those who have been with the education department will remember that in the previous years when we used to have elections around May, June, they'll continue until September, sometimes until October. But if we've managed to get 94% within this short period of time, I think it's a great achievement in itself. The election fraud was uniform across all provinces. We didn't have a province that says we will start on that day, we'll finish on the other day. They all adhered to the election fraud, except those schools that had problems. All provinces managed to come up with regulations. Unfortunately, we don't have election regulations from the Eastern Cape. But what we did in the absence of that was that now that there are guidelines from the national department on how elections need to be conducted, you rather use those because there was no time for them to can go through the process of public comments and all that. The Minister of Basic Education has been very busy with the roadshows to encourage parents and communities to take part in the election. And we say it was a fact and it's an achievement from our side to have the minister doing that. And we had members of the executive council really working hard. I think the media had a lot of interest in the election. We didn't have to pay them. They were the ones inviting us to come to them and give them information around the election, which we really applaud. and the fact that we have FGB Association working with us from day one until the end of the election. We're still going to work with them to compile their report, because this is just a preliminary report. As soon as every information comes in, there will be part and parcel of that. Schools were found to be very creative, encouraging parents to come to the elections. I've seen schools where you couldn't find a parking space coming to elections because children were told that if your parents come to the elections, you have CVs for 3 days and so on. And you can imagine the legal ones. They will call the parents, and the parents will be dragged to the election day screaming and kicking. And we thought those were innovative that we were expecting from schools. That's where we got the success. We have received very few disputes in terms of the elections. I'm not sure how many from provinces, but from the national office, I have about 8. Which is tremendous. It's an indication that people are beginning to understand these processes. And the fact that people are really part and parcel and not fighting over political issues around FGB elections. These are some of the challenges that we have. Let's admit that there are still schools that are receiving a low turnout, especially in rural areas and township schools. And what I can indicate is that it looks like there's a relationship between dysfunctionality and good schools with elections. Where schools that are dysfunctional, the turnout becomes low. Schools that are doing well, you get a very good turnout of parents in the election. But that has been our situation. Our challenge was, again, the lead preparation by the FNK and the fact that they never had regulations in place. We had few incidents of committees threatening to disrupt FGB elections to raise issues which are not related to governance, e.g. in postal space, there were service delivery process around water. We had Manamulele, which was well documented, but they soon caught up and Manamulele has now completed the election. We had in the Western Cape, Likavile and Kakameng, which were also affected by service delivery process. But like we said, if a school has given a date for election and that gets shifted, we always know where the next date is going to be. So the management plans are in place. So these will be completed very soon. We also have problems of lack of capacity in the department as a whole, that we are unable to monitor the 24,000 schools. It's just impossible. So some schools will go and elect without us, and we only depend on the reports that they give us, because they are just me.
If you say us,
we're referring to the provincial offices, to the national office, to the district, to the IEC, to FGB Association, all of us. Schools are just too many for us to manage. But what we do, we then prioritize schools that we believe, if we are not there, we may not be able to deal with the district, and then we dispatch people to those schools so that we can handle the situation well. And those that you trust, we say, we don't tell them we're not coming, we just keep quiet, but there are those that we trust. Now that the FGB elections are over, what do? Schools have put in days to elect office bearers, chairpersons, who are always parents, the secretary, the treasurer, and so on. They have 14 days to do that. Then we will have the engagement of the FGB in place. So before the end of this month, we expect all schools to have elected their office bearers. We expect the schools to finish off a handover process. This is a very serious process that every school needs to undertake, where you bring the outgoing FGB and the incoming FGB with a list of items that the outgoing FGB must hand over to the new FGB. This is in terms of policies, the finances, all documents that are there. And then there's a tick and comment that goes along that if you have received a receipt book which ends at receipt number, so and so. So that when the FGB takes over, it knows where to start and where to continue. So this is a process that is overseen by the district offices, in particular circuit managers, when it happens. After the handover processes, we expect provincial departments to conduct an operation of newly appointed FGBs. In the same meeting, thank the outgoing FGBs. I think Kaufman has already done it in the last meeting the NEC has conducted. So most of the provinces will be doing that. When that is over, the next step will be an induction orientation program on the roles and responsibilities of school governing bodies. This can be district-based, can be provincial-based. And as I'm seated here, we're getting a lot of invitations that says this district will be conducting its industrial orientation on this day. Will the nation come and support? So we'll always find ways to come and support this. When that is done, then there's a serious training of SEB program that takes place. And that takes place for the entire 3 years. Because the term of office is 3 years, so these SEBs must always be exposed to capacity building programs. I'll explain more how this takes place. The national office, together with provinces and SEB associations, develop a guideline, we call it guideline for the capacity building of school governing body members. These documents equate all areas that SGBs must be trained on. It's like a syllabus of the training of SGBs. So this document needs to be used by provincial officers because they are the ones responsible for the capacity building processes. They manage to train nicely with the provincial department. If they are service providers, they need to use that document in developing their training materials and train SGBs. So that document has been prepared and is being dispatched as I speak to all provinces so that they know what's trained. Another thing that the committee needs to be aware of is that the training of SEBs is a provincial mandate. But SASA Section 16 also requires principals to also assist in the training of the members of SEBs. So the document is used by all those different organizations. We then develop an SGB effectiveness tool. It's a tool that says what must the governing body have or be able to do or have in place if it to be considered functional. So it is a document that has a lot of questions and a lot of expectations which every SGB can use to assess itself. The province, the district can use this very same document to assess the functionality of SGBs. And that document would then indicate areas that are critical in the training of SGBs. So you use that plan, the capacity building programs, then it's what your training program for SGBs. We then request provinces to give us a management plan on how they will be training their SGBs on a year-to-year basis. So next week, on the 5th and the 6th, provincial officials will be meeting again at CDE to say, now that that is done, can we have proper management plan on how SEBs are going to be trained for their next financial year? And then we keep updating that for the next 3 years. In conclusion, we can indicate that we are seeing an increase in the number of parents that are attending our elections. And is really due to the fact that parents are beginning to understand the need to support learners in improving the standard of teaching and learning. Chairperson, our brief ends there.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ngembe. You know, as members of the fellow committee, in basic education, when we go out to them, people expect us to know all these things. That is why I will also plead with you to say, can we also get this document, this guideline, so that we understand them. We are invited now and again just to speak on the issues of the SGB. So really, we will appreciate it if we even ourselves, we become capacitated with these things. So it's just a plea that it will be a good thing if we can send copies for the members of the portfolio committee, just so that we know exactly what is happening, what is this document and failing and so on. Can I then open? Thank you so much for presenting. Yeah, it was straight and short, but straight to the point. So I think with all the clarified as on so many things. Can I just take then hands from the honourable members? And Mr. Ndebe, no matter how much you can be clear and rude in your presentation, I can assure you that all these questions, all of us. Thank you so much. can I start with Honorable Basson? Honorable Boshoff? Honorable Khoza? Honorable Lovemore? Honorable Bonjana. General Kosa, Kosa, Honorable Nguni, no, Honorable Macheke, then Honorable Nguni.
Nkosa.
Yes, Ukosa is mentioned. Ukosa.
Ukosa
is number three. Yeah. Honorable Fashion.
Up to 900 and something as well.
how is the status, how does the status as we speak now in those provinces? Secondly, the vetting of educators, because earlier on raised on this, or says presentation vis-a-vis the training of the SGPs in terms of their training, are they also going to be equipped in terms of the vetting processes, so that we can be in a position to support if possible? And also to add on the question of saying, perhaps we, in the vetting process, we are verifying the documents and the like, but there's something deeper in those educators that we deem as qualified. There are those who can be seen as people who are not competent enough in terms of their presentation when you come to their interaction with the learners in a classroom situation, that the person cannot be able to even to pass an assessment that can be done together with the kids in the classroom. Are we going to go deeper into that? So if so, how do we suppose say is to say, even though we know that the higher education is autonomous and the like, that we can nullify those qualifications because it would appear that the person never passed the module that he was doing in those in that institution. Lastly, the grace period of the handover. For how long is the handover supposed to be taking place when the new SGP is in place? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Khoja.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for what was indeed a very good presentation. It was very refreshing, Chair. And I don't think there's a single spelling error in your case. So well done. May we get some clarity on the Eastern Cape? I'm not sure if the regulations are in place. I'm from Eastern Cape, you might well know, and it's always a worrying that they're just always problems. My understanding is that the SGB election can't happen until the regulations have been gazetted. I also was approached by a colleague from KZN in an appeal that their regulations are gazetted the day before the elections were due to start. But if you could just give some insight into the Eastern Cape problem and what it's resulted in, the implications of the problem. I'm interested in, was it directly to do with the election per se, but it's to do with electing the wrong people, or what sometimes happens is that people lobby and they get their people out to vote, and most of the parent body doesn't come out to vote. I don't find anything in the legislation that allows the SGB decisions to be changed. I mean, SGBs have massive powers, which is exactly why you do advocacy, I think, to get the community aware of the powers. And let me use one example, but I've got no doubt that this has happened across the country. Klipkas Secondary School in the Karoo has learners who are predominantly Afrikaans-speaking colored children, 8%. But the SGB consists of black African people. The language was therefore changed. It's not Afrikaans any longer. It's Xhosa. It's my click. The community at the Cards, I find nothing in the legislation that allows an appeal against the decision of an SGB. There is a lot of talk in the legislation about a dysfunctional SGB, but not an appeal against a decision of an SGB. Can you assist? I know one of the answers is wait until the next year, wait until 3 years up and vote in the people you want there. But in the meantime, you've got children who are prejudiced by the decision of the SGB. In the legislation, with respect to dysfunctional SGBs, and I presume dysfunctionality, because the AC can decide on dysfunctional SGB, I presume he or she would use your tools to assist whether an SGB is dysfunctional or not. Can give some insight into that as well? But the MEC can appoint an administrator. Oh, they don't use that word, but somebody to play the role of the SGB. What sort of person would that be? Who would that be? Thank you.
Thank you.
thank you, Chair, and thank you to thank the department for the presentation. I'm aware that we're not on the functions of the chief school government board, is on the elections of the SCPs. Politicians are funny animals, you know, because in the otherwise good work by the department during the election of SCPs, party politics spoiled for good work. Now my question, do you or does the department have a dispute breaking mechanism when these things are disputed at that level as well? And you rightly emphasize the importance of training. You know, some of us who grew up and served during the era of school committees, you will go around, you don't see any difference between the present school government board and those old ones when it comes to functioning and, you know. Why? Because I've observed this. Most of the training material is in English. You go to rural school government bodies, you find people being trained in English. You say, my goodness. Because some of those school government bodies can't read and write. School government body members can't read and write. It's an effort of improving on that aspect.
No, you must always guard against exposing your age.
I'm very proud of my age. I'm 62. Which is good. Good.
So,
that's great.
Thanks, Chairperson. We also want to thank the process we've had that. They went very smooth in areas where we're coming from. I can see that you have mentioned there was a problem in Bushbuck, which we are coming from, but I think it's correct that the issue was not related to the election of the city, but thank God they were so. But what I wanted to check here is on challenges, you only mentioned the challenges towards and while doing election, but the challenge that I have seen when we visit schools is the effectiveness of the elected members. In most schools that I visited, you know, only a chairperson and the principal are becoming a show in the LGBT. The other members no longer seem to be there. I don't know how do you manage that issue. Another issue I wanted to check what in the training part of it. Do they understand these things? Because, you know, you find that the chairperson and the principal clashing over how to utilize the funds of the school. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable Majority.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I just want to ask this question, though this is about corruption. If SCBs have the right to say they want a particular teacher or they do not want if a teacher is deployed into a school? And secondly, how do you monitor that the principals do not corrupt the SCBs in terms of wanting to collude against a particular teacher who has to come and teach in the school? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you once more, Chair. think the first question has been dealt with, but I want to add one thing, Mr. Mayor. After the good presentation, fine and well done. This, you know, during elections, most of the schools do have parents coming in, more especially on the sector parents, on the parent sector. The question is still the issue of towards the end of the term, you find that there's no one or two members are available for SGP. What is it that we do to improve the situation that the members are there throughout the term of 3 years? And then the issue of, you know, I'm happy because if you look at the number, you can see you may be tempted as if KwaZulu-Natal has got many people and Eastern Cape. But the Western Cape did not do well. Did not do well, Western Cape. 21% of schools did not go for this lesson. And what do you do about this? Do we have a time frame of all the schools that did not go for the elections as national, that by this time all of them should have gone to? And then I know that now you'll be going for training. You'll be going for training. I would love that we end the discussion for these training manuals before they go to provinces. We will discuss the issues of financial accountability and the issue of documents for finances. Who should be keeping those things? Because as you are clearly putting, the trader will be a parent. The SGP chairperson might be a signatory. And they end up clashing. You see, the chairperson and the secretary and the treasurer, they end up signing a lot of checks without the principal's knowledge. But when auditing has to be done, the principal must take accountability. You see. So you must be checking on this, on those things. And also the issue of admission. I know it's an issue. You see. Thank you very much,
officer. Thank you so much. Babunde, when you outlined all the processes building towards the election, the SGP elections, I think there are various stages of which are very important for me. But my question will be, as a department, when do you begin to realize that there are areas of provinces that are not been up towards the whole process now of elections? I want to cite an example of the Eastern Cape. For me, to get a report now from the department saying Eastern Cape did not have the guidelines, they were not guaranteed, when did you, as the department, begin to know that, you know? Because I think for me, you should have had you should have seen the signs towards the period of these elections taking place. As to say, at least in case we are not putting up, so we could have assisted. Yes, I say we still have to tell us about what happened in case at the end for us to get such a high number, what happened in the Western Cape and so forth. I can say there's 3-4, there must be challenges here and there, it's fine. But with these other challenges, it's not a problem. But I'm very much concerned with the Eastern Cape. When did you begin to know that there was a problem in the Eastern Cape? Because once you can tell us that you only saw during the process, then I am going to say, as a committee, then you didn't do your job well then at the department, overseeing or getting reports from the provincial department as to what is happening. But with the various stages, realizing it's a nice thing that you are doing and you are going to learn more moving forward as to say how best can you correct the mistakes that you have committed from this year and other previous SGP elections. Yeah, you can respond.
The question is another presentation. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Let us assist you. Because he's the program manager, obviously a lot of questions that the operational will have to deal with. The question that was asked around whether SGBs will also be trained
on the issue of vetting, because they are also employing educators. I think it's something that we will have to take up, because I think what we need to acknowledge is the fact that vetting has not been institutionalized within the sector. And that is why even in the provincial education departments themselves, there are quite a few that have received some audit opinions around the issue of vetting. So it's an area that the SA department as a whole, we need to work with SAIS, and we also need to ensure that we strengthen it and also ensure that even our SGBs and independent schools and employers are able to take this on board. So I think it's an area that we need to work very hard on, as a department, to ensure that it is institutionalized within the sector. The issue around Jefferson, how do we monitor the fact that principals do not corrupt SGBs? It's quite a challenge, but I think one of the things that we've been able to do during this round of elections is to make sure that we communicate more around the attributes that are needed for people who are eligible to be elected into the SDP, so that people are conscientized about ensuring that they elect people with the necessary skills and competencies, but also about the fact that SGBs are able to co-opt people in the areas where the skills are non-existent, so that these co-opted people can then provide additional support. Because we believe that if we have high levels of awareness amongst people who have been elected, then we minimize chances of those people being manipulated for selfish and other malicious intentions. But it's true that this is an area that would require constant monitoring, because it will remain a risk. As much as it is our intention to elect people with the necessary skills, but we know that these skills are not readily available everywhere. So there will be areas where this risk continues to exist. The question around when did we realize that there are problems in provinces like Eastern Cape, just to indicate that we've been doing what we call monitoring the state of readiness of provinces in the run-up to the elections themselves. And Mr. Zebe was at some point even deployed in the Eastern Cape for some time to go and assist them with the development of those regulations. When it became clear that they were not really going to be able to declare such regulations, but those interventions unfortunately were still not successful in ensuring that that risk in the Eastern Cape is mitigated. Our early warning signals went in other provinces. For an example, at some point, Limpopo did not even have a budget that they had set aside to ensure that the elections were going to run smoothly. But through those interventions, we were able to come on board and we were able to ensure that Limpopo was on board. But unfortunately for Eastern Cape, it was not out of lack of awareness from our side that this was going to be a risk, but it was mainly administrative issues that still unfortunately ensured that we are where we find ourselves. Okay, I'm sure Mr. Ntebe will do. Okay.
They ended up without recognition for the medication that it was impossible to do. Maybe to take Chairperson back. When we realized that there were problems in
in the Eastern Cape. It's 2 hours deployed to the Eastern Cape to work with the colleagues, with all the CESs, the GTT directors in every district, to come up with a management plan because there were none. Then we developed a management plan in my presence at the situation. When it came to regulations, I spent 2 days with them, rewriting the regulations, breaking from the previous one, the guidelines, and it was ready. I picked up that document back to Pretoria, to government printer. They gave us a code for this to go on public comments, which they did. Then we send it back to the Ten Cape and say, that's your code. What you need to do is to transfer money, and then your document will go for public comments after the MECSM. So we then say, now this process is done. Only to be told at 11 hour when we inquire, how far are you with the process? Then when we counted the number of days required for public comments and the problematization, we then realized that they're not automated. Then together we then said, there's no need. You need about certain number of days to send this for public comment. And already, you haven't done what was supposed to be done. Then the question was, what do we do in the absence of regulations? Then the answer is, you use the previous regulations, and then you beat it up with national guidelines. Then you inform the schools and school governing body associations about the area, that may we use the national department guidelines and the previous, because there would be one or two differences, but the guidelines would then close the gaps. Then on behalf of the Eastern Cape, we then negotiated with the relevant LGB associations, especially LGB associations that are likely to take us to court. FEDFA being one of them, and said, FEDFA, this is the issue. They said, no, use the regulations, use the guidelines, because they were part and parcel of the development of the guidelines, so they are here with the guidelines. And FEDFA then translated the guidelines into Africans on their own and said, our member schools will be here using this. So this is the agreement that we ended up having with the Eastern Cape.
I'm sorry, honorable members, to study dialogue. But then, Mr. Davis, department, what's the problem? Because as a committee, these are the things we need to understand and to care about. Is it the lack of capacity or the lack of willingness to cover? Or negligence? Because these are the things we come out here, the committee, we engage with various provinces, and it's one of the things that we need to record so that when we, according to, what is the problem? Why are we ending in this situation with the Eastern Cape? That's just for the show. We are building up anyway, anything with other provinces, but this one is really, it's a little bit disturbing. Why necessarily then?
Certain, I didn't say lack of capacity because there is a document ready for you to take forward and nothing happens. So it's not much of a capacity issue. It could be something else.
Lack of accountability.
Which party is running that process?
It's government,
there's a meeting again that includes SGP, and I'm not sure, but that's the information I got. We promised to bring documents for every honorable member. All the documents that I spoke about will be packaged. They're well designed, they look beautiful. So you'll get a package. We'll also give you electronic copies. Those are SGP guidelines for elections, which inform the regulations. Those are the capacity building programs. That will be the tool that I spoke about. And some of the company will get there. This is where you're going to get answers about the development of a voters form. That when you look at the guidelines of the regulations, they define what a parent is. They define a parent, a guardian, and all that, and say who then qualifies to be in the voters form and be eligible for elections. Now, the definition says it's a biological parent or anybody that takes care of the child in the absence of a biological parent. Maybe the biological parent has passed away. Maybe the biological parent has moved to housing when the parent is in the Eastern Cape. There is somebody that if this child collapses at school, the school will call this person because they recognize that this is the person that is looking after the child. So that becomes a parent in terms of our definition. So these are the people that get into the water soil. The development of the water soil requires that long before the election, the school needs to verify who is taking care of these children. Whether the biological parents, the divorced parents, children living with ANA and so on. And the water soil will always have two spaces for parents. A space for the father and a space for the mother. But if it's a single parent, you don't go and import somebody else to add to the number. It means it's one parent. That is why in the elections, you don't count the number of members, you count the number of parents in the voter roll. Because there are these variations. So the answer is the appear definition of who qualifies and how do you qualify in terms of being called a parent or a guardian. And who are these LGB associations? Normally, LGBs in particular areas, we will affiliate to an association that has been formed. To give you a few of them, there is National Association of School Governing Bodies, which operate predominantly in townships and rural schools. They're black. You've got Texas, which operates predominantly in African schools and also has a few of English schools. You have Governance Alliance. It's very strong in Gauteng and in other places. You've got Governing Body Foundation, which is very strong in the Western Cape. You've got the National Association of Schools, and you've got them up, there are about six of them. It's national. So what schools do is to look at these associations that are operating nationally and affiliate to those associations, to the members. In the same way as teachers will affiliate to unions. A teacher needs to check which union would better meet his needs and become a member of that union. So LGBs, together as schools, will then decide to affiliate to a particular association. As a department, we support schools affiliating to associations because associations have a responsibility to also train their members, to also advise their members, so they assist the department in that. And on a quarterly basis, we meet with the National Association at GD 11 to talk about challenges and other things that should require. And we even support these processes. The department has norms and standards of funding which they amended to allow the department to pay affiliation fees of schools to the association. So a school just needs to affiliate and the department will pay the affiliation fee. As long as the association has demonstrated that this is our member, there are documental proof in terms of that. So we work with them in that session. Is it compulsory? It's not. It's an association. So it's open to but we encourage it, it's freedom of association, but we encourage schools to belong to association. It is easy to send messages about that if they belong there. The preparing of schools in special schools, it is not a problem because when elections take place in special schools, in the same elections that says we need so many parents, depending on the number of children and what has been allocated to the parents. So that process is the same. The difference with special schools comes in at the end of the elections, when parents have already been elected. The law says these schools must then have specialists that are brought into the LGBT. So if it's a school for the deaf, they must find a specialist that will be incorporated. So these are not people that are part and parcel of the election. They are added after the election, depending on the disability of the school. So there are schools, special schools with physical disability. The children are fine. They can be members of the LGBT. So if schools have children have mental disabilities, then those you can include in the LGBT as learners. Then you depend on the specialist. And it is always the MEC that decides which group of specialists need to be included in the schools and how they really need to be. At the moment, we're dealing with DASA, that is saying we want to get involved. How association, they have a right to be members of the LCDs with full voting rights in schools where there are children with visual disability. So the parenting is not a problem. The handover problem, the handover, if we don't have the capacity, it's because the election period happened within a very short space of time, and everybody is electing at that time. But when it comes to handover processes, it's a bit organized in the sense that it is the second manager and his 20, 25 schools that need to draw up a program with the schools and decide on when handover is going to take place. And now that there are other district officials like the CE assistant and the subject advisors, they can be deployed to oversee the situation. But basically, nothing normally goes wrong when you have the principal, the chairperson, and an official there, because what is important is to record the fact that, yes, this has been handed over, and the signatures are shared. So it's not much of a risk for the handover. Somebody cannot confirm to have received something that it never received, and then the signatures around those documents give us a guarantee that the handover process has taken place as expected. For LGB, for teachers who belong to the LGB, we really don't look at the competency. We don't check the competency to teach and be a good teacher. Because these are democratic processes where teachers in the staff room will vote and indicate who they want there. It's like politicians. We don't even question whether are you up to. We take the words of the voters and say, are elected this teacher to sit in the LGB. Maybe they look at other skills to help the school rather than the teaching itself. So we don't look at that. There's a question around the grace period for the handover period. We normally say handover must take this within 14 days. But you know, something that happened just within that 14 days that the handover doesn't take place. So we will say, please, as soon as possible. Because after this, we'll be looking at which schools have completed handovers, which ones happened, then trying to push them to ensure that it happens as soon as possible before people lose interest in the process itself. Do we have a dispute breaking mechanism when we deal with elections? Yes. The best call is the district. Any parent who is not happy about how the elections went through, then go through the district. The district, then it graduates into the provincial office, and other disputes that are not solved end up at the national office. And we don't have rules to say it must start there and end there. Everybody, some of the grievances we get come from the minister, directly right to the minister. So as it comes down, we try to resolve them. And usually the type of dispute you get with elections is the eligibility of parents. People complaining about a parent who doesn't have a child, who's not supposed to be there, but has been elected. Basically, those are the things that we deal with. So we investigate those things and give a ruling that, yeah, this is the true guardian of this parent and whatever. No, this parent has been rented. And we overrule these elections, and then they have to take the next parent in the line, because there'll be a line of how many people are there. So we don't go back to the elections. We normally take the next step and then disqualify those. Some of them make it an issue and take it up to the MEC level. And that's where the final decision lies with the MECs. When we change LGBs, we try by all means to localize this. It's not a training that will take place in the same way as it happens in council with the MEC addressing all newly appointed LGB elections. We try to form smaller groups and small communities so that the issues of language are dealt with there. I see the language is written in English, but when they are together in a localized area, they are able to talk their home language. In Bushbuck Ridge, they will be speaking the languages that are there in Bushbuck Ridge, the facilitators. The facilitators are normally employed by provinces from the very same area so that they can communicate the same language and they can be able to deal with the issues that are there. And what is more important in the training itself is what Mr. Rawutapo was trying to respond to, that people need to understand what an LGB is. An SGP is not a principal and is not the chairperson. It's a collective. That's where decisions are taken. And that's where a principal cannot thus influence particular members of the SGP if they understand that decisions are taken in the boardroom with all of them there. And to say SGPs are illiterate, sometimes it may not be true, because in those SGPs, they are learners. Surely they are literate. They are teachers. Surely they can read and write. There could be one or two members of the parents' conference that are not there. But even if they can't read and write, they are not stupid. Yeah. These are people who, if you tell them that when a principal says we need to pay the school, they can align their mind and say, I don't think we support this. I think we should use the money somewhere else. That is the capacity you want. And that is the training that we try by all means to provide, that you don't take what you are told at face value because it comes from a principal. That is the training and that's what you're trying to push. And the challenge of elected members who don't understand the trend, that's exactly what I was trying to say. But yeah, the material might be coming in English, but I've seen some moves from provinces to really change this material and put them in languages that people can understand, especially those who have dominant particular ethnic groups. They then try by all means to make them available. SGBs and teacher development and teacher redeployment is another area. I think there are regulations that guide the department on who to deploy in school and what can the SGB say. I think the challenge comes in when the SGB just refuses to accept a redeployed teacher without reason. Because a redeployed teacher must match what the requirements of the schools are. If you advertise an English post and a particular rate and department then redeploys a particular person that has qualifications and has taught them and has experience, as an SGP you may not have much to say to defend yourself why you don't want the teacher. And the department normally fails to enforce that. When the SGP says you don't want this person, the SGP can say we don't want the person because this person does not meet the profile of the post. So we start the profile and not redeploying people here with redeploying posts. And that's the message that needs to go out there. So SGPs tend to take this too serious and give themselves powers and authorities that they don't have. And so there's the issues of how a principal can't corrupt an SGP, because an SGP is not an individual. An SGP is a group of people. Unless you allow meetings to take place in corners. But if they take place in the bottom, and it's a decision of the majority that counts. They sometimes have to vote in those decisions. Honorable Lovemore has very difficult questions to ask, which require a whole day to look at them. Dysfunctionalities of SGPs, they are regulated in SASA. If the SGP is found not to be functional, SGPs have responsibilities, manage the funds, change the buildings, need at least 3 times a quarter. Those are stipulated. So if the SGP is doing none of those, even before we come up with all our own documents and so on, SASA affairs, says the head of department must then say, you are dysfunctional, you are not functional, and how do you replace and bring in a person there? An administrator could be anybody. It could be an official. The head of department might decide to bring James as a commissioner and say, can you look after this governing body for the 2 or 3 months? It should exceed 3 months so that we allow another election to take place and call on. So it could be anybody that is regarded as an administrator. If the decision of the SGB is wrong, it is the head of department again and the officials that needs to draw this attention of the SGP that you are not working in the spirit of the law. What does the constitution say? What does SASA say? What does NEPA say? And deal with it along those lines. When it becomes difficult is when those pieces of legislation have given the SGP powers to deal with it. For example, language determination. it's an African school design, they are an African school, we're not going to introduce English. The law has given them that authority. The department can jump up and down as it wishes. It will never change. But if they take a wrong decision which is not covered by that, then the head of department can say, enforce that. And if the school refuses, then the head of department can disband that SGP because they are not pursuing the spirit of the law. So in schools where we want to have access, the language issue becomes a barrier. We have court cases that we have lost as a department when we try to push them. So what it means is that SASA, NEPA, maintains in order to allow the department to make any rules. And I think our legal services are working around those stipulations to make sure that they are really in line with the Constitution and reduce the powers of SGPs where there is an abuse of power coming. I don't know how the judgment will look like when it comes out, but I believe the legal service is working at the changing of those things. The regulations that were released a day before, like in case that you wanted to know what might happen, did it? Sometimes we work so hard with our provincial counterparts to an extent that later you are told the document is with legal services at KZN. And you don't have access to legal services at KZN. You only have these counterparts of yours that you can push. Then later you are told it is at the embassy table. And that's where it gets up. And we keep saying, no, it is with the embassy. And then you realize that this is really the day before the election. It is those type of things that we talk about. That the management plan then becomes ignored. And the documents already, public comments have been corroborated. All it needs is a signature that it goes to. And that's where the delay comes in. And you say, like, can I call the agency and tell him, please, I'm waiting? So those are the challenges. Some SGPs will come for a period of time and they can help and they disappear, but that's the question that comes from Honorable Mugwe. The law allows us to cohort. If we realize that this member has not been coming, and SGP is under the Constitution, that if you don't attend three consecutive meetings and all that, you're out, then they must cohort and have other members and have five elections and all that type of thing. But to keep an SGP running, it's a responsibility of the principal. Because we never know whether that SGP is functional or not from the national department. Unless the principal comes forward and say, I don't see these people. But it is the responsibility of the principal to ensure that it is functional. That is why we included it in Section 16A of the amended South African School Act, the roles and responsibilities of the principal. One of them is to make sure the principal functions. I remember in the SGP function. I remember in one of the things when we were trying to amend these things, we were saying, when you deal with assessment, performance management of the principal, the functionality of the SGP must be part and parcel of their responsibility. That if the SGP is not functional, then you have to evaluate them accordingly, that they are failing in their duty. And when you start pushing that, you start seeing some action taking place. When you put SGP training, sometimes you set up a training and SGPs don't show up. But the moment you sit on the principal and say your members need to be there or else you'll account, you start seeing something different. They start pushing these members to come and attend those things. The different question is that, and I'm not sure which is the problem.
The Western Cape.
Yes, the Western Cape
cases,
as Western Cape, we have talked about it. What are the reasons that
come
forth for such a number of schools not
to test their SGP? I think it's poor follow up to the plan. We ask for 2 days from each school. Date number one, a date on which elections will be conducted. Date number two, a date on which you will conduct the elections in case you fail on the third day. So those dates we have. So what happens on the second date if the elections have not taken place? It's something that we really don't understand what can happen. Except those that we know there was disruption. And where in the absence of disruption, it basically us not having ensured that these elections are taking place indeed or not. I think it's a matter of even them start getting a shock that we thought this process is over, then you're getting this. But what we then do is that you're giving us the names of these schools now that have not elected. Can we have a new management plan that starts from last week when the schools open and does not go beyond the end of May? Can we do that? And this is the process we are in now.
So we'll always have a mock-up period.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Remember, one or two follow-up questions, whatever you've got, haven't been. I will allow that. We are enjoying this time, DDG. We are always rushing for the plan and we don't have it today. And we are sorry for keeping you so long, but you have to accomplish things once time allows as today. So I will open up a chance for further questions, then we'll wrap up. Honorable Koshoff, Honorable Lovemore. Also, that is approved. I approve you as a lady to us. You so cool, and you so good. Guys, I have a Koshoff.
I just have a question with regard to union involvement in SGBs. Do you find unions are getting involved, and what role do they play? Thank you.
Chair, I just want to clarify what I asked previously. While the relevant officials are here, is there no mechanism of appeal against an SGB decision? By a community, a school community, for example. Is there no mechanism of appeal? Legal mechanism. Thank you.
So it's like the LGBT has misrepresented the community, the people that they the same language issue. If the community changes, if the predominant Zulu school, the community changes, and you all of a sudden have Swanas, you're going to have voices that says introduce Swana in that school. And if the SB becomes a stumbling block, then with a vote of no confidence, let them step down, let's re-elect another SGB that will take the decision that we want as a community. But normally, sometimes the department doesn't even have to wait for a complainant. If they get rumors that this SGB has taken a decision that is contrary to legislation, we have the responsibility to act on that and overrule them and change the decision immediately. So it doesn't have to be a particular community member reporting on that. Dispute when it comes to appointments. Too many legislations come in. SASA that is SGBs recommend and not appoint, recommend. When the recommendation goes to the department needs to look at a few things. Not everything. Is the teacher qualified? Does it meet the profile of that school, the advertisement against the qualification and the experience and all that? So it becomes so difficult in post level one. That as a department, how do you say the recommendation of the SGB is a wrong? If a Vatbat has an English course and this person is a new teacher, has an English qualification. So if you say you don't want this teacher as a department, what are you basing your bet on? Politics. Then you never win that case anywhere in the court of law. The challenge becomes when you're dealing with principals. The SGB recommends principals. But there are a lot of things that you look at. And sometimes unions might try and influence, and SGBs come in and give you a recommendation that when you look at it as a department, you realize, oh gosh, this is bizarre. But the head of department has the right to say, I'm not taking your number one, and these are the reasons I'm giving you why your number one is not suitable. Probably the school type, this person has not experienced in a primary school, this person has not worked in this section, this person doesn't have the necessary qualification, and therefore I'm saying reconsider, or else I'll change to another two. And if the head of department, in terms of the Employment of Educators Act, there are three things that you need to look at. And it says, I'm sticking my hand. They can go to court, the SGB will never win the case. So it's a matter of the merit.
Thank you so much for that, Babun Jebe. DG, let me re-emphasize this now. It's so nice and refreshing even from our side to do this detail and getting a presentation that is flowing, that is informative, coming from a person who is very confident on what he or he is presenting, you know. I would have to thank the department very much today for the presentation that we have done. Yeah, well done. This is really, it's a big on top of Bangladesh, why he's here. But if we can get more evidence, you know. I'm not saying that, okay, but we have to comment and, you know, and thank a good thing that has happened. Really, I think we had a very great presentation today. But before I even close with on announcement, can I just hand over to you, Didi? I'm sorry. So that you can.
Sure.
Okay, before
sure,
can I give to Didi Bonjani?
I would wish to support you 100% of what you said, and also to say it shows that Mr. Deva comes from a certain teacher organization.
I won't get into that one, but sorry if we are. I'll do justice. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think that for us as SGB, we are trying as far as possible to ensure that the quality of what we convey here meets with the standards that we set for ourselves even before we try to meet the standards of Parliament. I want to say also that we are looking forward with excitement to what we are going to hopefully be able to bring to the committee in the near future. A number of these details have been very, very rigorously interrogated
at the strategic retreat. And we would wait for the minister's line of march that you will be issuing at the education about to vote for us to get your guidance in terms of what it is that you would like further details on. A number of the issues that are dealt with today at SGB matters also have cross-cutting, transversal impact on other areas of the work that we're doing, especially in relation to, before today, the slave issue. Looking at coherence across the sector, the purpose of the retreat was to exactly that which we need to remediate in this administration. The minister is saying once again, she would have to reflect on 10 years of having been in office at the end of this term, and that we can't be resting on laurels or leaving unfinished business unfinished. So it's a lot of that kind of detail that officials from across the provinces and national had to interrogate. So the work for the SGP will also signal some of what I said in my introductory comments, which is about legislative review, that we are very good as a national department at generating policy. We've self-reflected very, very honestly on the fact that implementation often leaves us wanting. And that for all of the work that we also need to do about ensuring that the sector is managing what entities do, today we also saw a reflection of that, which is why it was important for us to be part of the invitation that you attended to SAFE to return today. So for both sets of discussions, we will go back to our base and also be able to reflect with senior management, there as board management, on what it was that we identified for ourselves as further follow-up action. A number of the issues can be guided by policy directives or guidelines from the performance management and oversight section of residency or from Treasury, but some of the field tips that we see with how people understand strategic planning from the central space, we are saying we need to look at that very rigorously. We cannot let anything be tabled in Parliament that we have given advice on and have not been followed up on. And we can't sit here as a national department simply taking this for work that we also have done. So we need to say also to and to admit to the members here today that we are going to ensure that we follow up and that the policy that you've seen today is a constant feature of the work that we are doing. So thank you for your rigor and your critique as members, as honourable members of the committee. We learn from that and we take it back to our base. So just thank you very much for this opportunity, and we will first make sure the guideline documents, like the SGB guideline documents and others that are produced, that will reach you. Every time we go back to communications or to the publications, you know, we say, kindly ensure that people are included in the messaging, so statements, etc., reach you. We'll certainly ensure that the guideline documents also reach you. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Honourable Member of the Chair.
Thank you very much, Dirigi, and your delegation. Honourable Members, I've got two announcements to make. I hope so, because you see this, Honourable Members, we need to adopt our report no matter what. We'll try by all means to push that maybe we get our report back due to the new processes in Parliament. We can't get our report just straight from after we compile it, then come to a committee to adopt. It has to go through the House Chair, then the process, and then come back to us. But we'll try by all means to make sure that the House Chair understands that our budget votes next week. So at least if we can get our report by tomorrow, if it is possible, so that maybe by tomorrow afternoon we adopt it. We try by all means to push for the morning, but we are not sure really. Coming out of this meeting, I have to go and sit with the House Chair to make sure if ever it can be processed already now and throughout the night. I don't know what, how he's working on it. Oh, Mr. Rang will be in communication with you as to say when are we meeting, but we hope by tomorrow we must be seated and adopt the report so that it can be ICT for us to be able to sit next to for our budget vote. But this is just the tip up that you are left with. we try by all means that tomorrow we meet. The latest we try that by 1-2 we do a sit-up together, we convince so that we look at the report and adopt it. Secondly, the another announcement. I'm announcing it even to the department, you know. I know we have tried to communicate, but we're still going to come up with the final communication decision. As we know that it's our budget vote on Wednesday. We know that there's a busy schedule that we always have, and also the changes in the parliamentary program for next week. Remember, on Tuesday and Wednesday, we're having a plenary in the morning. So that caused for us to postpone the session that we're going to have with the department next week on the management of schools and the supervision. So definitely we won't have the next session, which means we have to go back and rework on the program to see when can slot in the presentation for next week. So that is another announcement. So we won't have a PC meeting next week. Well, we're still going to meet as a committee to adopt the report, and then we'll see each other on the budget vote, and then after that again, we hope our program will go back to normal as planned.
Thank you very much. On your first announcement, you have my undertaking that will be for tomorrow. But this is Thursday and Friday, unfortunately. And Thursday, unfortunately, there is a political party that's going to be in the by-election for all the seats, you know. So I'll be coming in.
I'll try by all means to do that. Thank you so much. No, if you ever will meet tomorrow, as we try to meet tomorrow, there will be nothing on that.
Oh, good.